and even producing a purring-like sound.
That sure was good meat, little worm. I should go and look for something else now.
That wasn't enough for you?
There's never enough for me, no matter how much there is. I am strange and mysterious like that.
I'm pretty strange myself.
Are you? In that case, it's a good thing I didn't gobble you up. Really great, actually. Would be a shame to eat someone who's just like you.
I agree wholeheartedly.
It's a pity I don't remember why I stood there waiting for worms. I was supposed to know a great secret and be able to share it in exchange for meat. You have given me some meat, which I enjoyed, but I have forgotten the secret. Oh well, time for me to get going. I won't hold you any longer. Call me if you ever feel like a chat.
Call you?
Just say it out loud, the way that other worm did. Game Administrator Alpha 402, calling object number 1145028, bug report number 7945, to the technical location. Will you be able to remember that?
I'll remember it all right, but will you come?
Right away, but not for long. And you have to say the words yourself. It can't be someone else. You're funny, after all, and curious. You tried to tickle me by yourself, without calling for help. And it was a funny little insect that you sent to fight me. You are brave and stupid. They usually gather up a crowd to tickle me, so I can no longer catch them. That is when I get very nervous and end up catching them in the end. Anyway, I should get going already. I've got business to attend to. Look at me, still saying my goodbyes and not going anywhere.
Bye-bye, bug. The mob got past the zone of felled trees and trampled bushes that remained after the fight, but turned around before disappearing into the woods.
Oh, I nearly forgot. Don't call me too often, or I might get upset. I have gotten used to wandering around on my own, after all, and if you do call me, make sure there's some food around, or I'll get really upset. And then you can't fault me if I chew on a worm or two to feel better.
You acquire a new skill, Summon Malfunctioning Quest. When activated by voice, a no data will appear in your current location. Cooldown, 75 days. New auxiliary stat unlocked, Eloquence. Your eloquence grows to 6. You will get bigger discounts from NPC merchants and be able to purchase goods at lower prices. NPCs with a negative attitude toward your race will often ignore their own prejudice. Achievement received. Know thyself better. Achievement bonus, plus 5 HP. Achievement unlocked. Broaden your horizons. Unlock 100 auxiliary stats to complete the achievement. Achievement bonus, random. The trees and the bushes kept snapping under the heavy steps of a bug that even an administrator couldn't fix. Ross gave up on the idea of having some meat for breakfast and sat right there in the forest among the vegetation trampled by bug, studying the forum attentively. He was interested in the strange mob and wanted to find out more about it. And so he did. Bug used to be an important NPC in a complex quest chain offering a substantial reward to whoever managed to complete it. The smiley face was supposed to accept the results somewhere around the middle stages of the chain, and then instruct the players further on completing the latter parts, and maybe even provide personal assistance. Nobody knew for sure, for no one had managed to get past Bug in the entire history of Second World. Bug wasn't interested in the results of any quests, and offered no information on completing the chain. The smiley face simply ate the players who didn't run away with due haste. The only ones who managed to get away were solitary players. The mob would usually refrain from using its signature skill on them. But anyone who came in a party would get stunned for a long while with its roar. the mob would proceed to consume the stunned players at its leisure, calling them worms as it gobbled them up. It took the players a while to realize something was wrong with the quest, reasoning it was a boss that had to be killed for the quest to continue. They came in parties, raid groups, and then multiple raid groups. The outcome remained the same. Bug would slowly devour anyone too slow to run away, and no one had managed to make even the smallest dent in its HP. The logical conclusion was reached. The creature was no boss, but rather an NPC, perfectly useless for dropping trophies and retaining the invulnerability option since the beta testing stage. There were plenty of those during development, though all of them had lost that feature afterwards. Or almost all, evidently. The game administration made an official apology, declared the quest to be a malfunction, and recommended everyone to keep away from the quest zone while the bug was being fixed. But Bug decided against getting fixed, nor did it stay in the quest zone. It had been sighted in every sector of the game world for about a year now, usually next to someone killing large game. Moose and buffaloes were his favorites. And no matter where Bug was sighted, it always did the same thing. Chewed up anyone too slow to run away, very slowly and methodically. What a fascinating game. It had been over a year, and they still couldn't fix a blatant error. Moreover, the error had managed to munch on an administrator, and in a technical location no less, which was apparently beyond everyone's access. Just a moment. There were numerous forum posts to the effect that there were no administrators in the game. Or maybe the technical location didn't count? At any rate, it was time to stop bothering with the forum. He needed to do something about fire post-haste, and then move on before he attracted the attention of something even worse than Bug. Chapter 40.
What we mustn't forget is that these days Second World is probably the main source of online pornography. We can speak of virtually every type of consumer of this product, as it were, being covered. Real men and women cannot compete with 3D animation. Apart from being impossible to distinguish from the real thing, the latter has another enormous advantage over the former. It suffices to purchase an account and then pay a bit extra for the ability to edit your appearance, and you get everything you need to be a model, a stunning girl or a handsome and well-endowed male, with all the features required by the genre. Porn producers no longer need to invest in professional equipment for photography or video recording. Anyone can record everything they observe in the game or make high-resolution stills. The amazing graphics lauded so aggressively by official advertising can be used as decorations for adult films just as easily as battlegrounds. The term interracial sex never covered a great variety of relations formerly, but these days you could see a lot more for a token amount of money, or even free of charge if you know where to look. There can be intercourse between a green orc with fangs and a blonde elven maiden, as well as dwarves, goblins, demons, reptilian races, and so forth. Something for every taste. You may not be interested in intercourse between sentient beings, but there are hundreds, nay, thousands of the so-called mobs. One recollects a recent in-game sensation in this respect. A group of players had intended to record a film featuring a high-level elite monster, incredibly dangerous and rather infamous. Control skills were supposed to keep it paralyzed so that it could be treated the way it had never been treated before. Something went wrong, however, and it got its rather brutal revenge on the players for their ill-fated attempt at sexual assault. The resulting porn-slash-comedy film became popular even among those who had no interest in such content in general. Child porn is another thing to consider. An account can be registered from the age of 16, and in some cases the age of 10, if sanctioned by medical professionals. But we are not talking about actual children here. The thing is that the game has several anthropomorphic races that look explicitly infantile without any effort. In other words, they look just like children. You can amplify the racial features as you edit your characters and end up with a character who looks like a 14-year-old or even younger. These are in high demand in game brothels. Pornographic photographs and videos with their participation are also popular among a certain type of users. It is perfectly legal in many countries, provided none of the models are actually underage. De facto, the propagation of such content online is viewed by many as a cause for concern. Recent protests in Japan were a result of this phenomenon. A notorious pornographic video featuring a model that was the spitting image of a protagonist from a popular film. No members of the Second World Project's administration have issued any official comments regarding the game's transformation into a porn production studio. Ignoring their critics who say it's one of their numerous revenue streams, which is perfectly true, since none of the model accounts are free. But if they did comment, they would likely simply refer to their official policy of not meddling in the gaming process. The only response I recall concerned an allegation of sexual exploitation of underage players by the company, and their defense was that the above is technically impossible. It wasn't just that one cannot undress a player without their consent, there were other account protection measures besides, meaning minors were out of bounds, even with consent. A SW representative mentioned a whole complex of measures aimed at protecting minors, dismissing claims of possible circumvention of said measures as frivolous speculation bearing no relation to gaming reality. His reply to the question about preventing lewd actions that did not involve physical contact, such as text messages and voice chat, was that no one has found any protection from such behavior to date, and that the problem pertained to the web in general, and not just one gaming project. From an article by Stanley Haight, a popular blogger. Ross avoided roads, villages, or any other locations marked as active leveling zones on the game forum, but he still had some misadventures on his way to Tyrom, the capital of Dukatan, a province adjacent to Livoria. Four characters with pitch-black skin emerged from the bushes just under Ross's nose. He didn't notice them until the last moment. Their names were redder than anything he'd ever seen, and they were a far cry from the stupid dwarf loner who must have gotten his color from some hapless fool logging off in a wrong place. Indeed, these were professional killers. "Hey-ho, here we go. Why, hello, little lady," the archer grinned mirthfully, adding as he put his arrow back in the quiver pointedly, "I've changed my mind about killing you. That's right, no one's gonna hurt you, and all I ask in return is that you stick around a while and make us happy." "What are you going on about?" scoffed a warrior with a short halberd. "Are you blind? Her appearance is based on her looks IRL, so she's a minor for sure. No way you can screw this one." Ayume said they managed it somehow. They found a bug or something. Which makes this an excellent opportunity to test if he was lying. "Come over here, little girl. You're gonna like it." "Why did you ladies decide to have your slumber party so deep in the woods?" asked Ross, emotionally preparing for a respawn. The outcome of facing four brutes like that didn't look too good. "Afraid of level zero noobs hurting you? Afraid? Us? Oh, but you're a barrel of laughs, aren't you? Come now, I'm starting to lose patience," the archer approached, thrusting his hand forward. He may have been planning to grab Ross or maybe try something else. It didn't matter much to Ross. He simply let loose a chaos arrow right in the player's face at point-blank range. Critical hit, blinding. "You bitch!" the archer howled, falling to his knees and clutching his face with his palms. "Death to murderous bastards!" Ross shouted and dashed toward the rest of the group, waving his staff. All three were melee fighters, which was the most popular class, and they reacted automatically by striking attacking stances. At the very last moment, Ross turned away and ran right past them. The one in the halberd roared something, and a shiver ran down his skin. You successfully reflect the effects of the stone voice skill. Your opponent is stunned. This was a bit of luck. The warrior had intended to stun Ross, but the belt's properties prevented this, and so it was the warrior who got paralyzed. Otherwise, Ross's mad dash would end right there and then. With the archer taken out of commission for a while, and the warrior with the stunning skill incapacitated for another couple of seconds, Ross could only hope the remaining two weren't fast runners. In what was becoming a tradition of sorts, Ross was still running as he approached the gates of Tyrom and jabbered quickly before the guards could ask him any questions. "Bandits! I barely managed to escape. Had to run for quite a while." The NPC mage studied Ross attentively and then asked, "Did you see anything unusual?" "I don't think I did. Hey, where's the local bank?" "We have many of those. Which one do you need?" "I'm not sure." "Then I suggest you make sure before you ask." A variety of banks suggested this was a big city, and indeed, it was the capital of a province, and not the shabbiest one either. There was a lot more going on here than in any of the towns Ross had visited previously. There was enough to keep noobs and top players alike entertained, and players with all sorts of skills could find employment here. Thousands of players and NPCs walked the streets, and a petite flighting could get lost here much easier than the proverbial needle in the hay. Ross looked up information on the banks on the forum, realizing it was just what he'd needed all this time, a place to keep his cash and valuable possessions. There was no point in going there without any money, so he headed for the Jeweler's Guild, where he unloaded 600 cut gems and earned over 5,000 silver pieces for everything. Curiously enough, no gold was given as payment, even here. Ross wondered what he would do if someone gave him 1,000,000, as that would amount to some 5 tons of silver. The time was right for introducing paper money. Ross was fully determined to earn a lot more than that. He received another 1,000 from an NPC blacksmith in the artisan quarter for the metal. Then he visited the Mage's Guild, where he purchased another buff called the Anti-Magic Shield, which reduced magic damage, obviously enough. He also got Purify, a spell that removed all negative effects and a must-have for an honest buffer, as well as Revive, which resurrected high-level players who hadn't yet respawned. He remembered that he would need to treat the effects of critical damage, too. The Heal Injuries spell took care of those. Now it was time for a control spell. Entangling Roots was good for that, binding the target's feet and rendering it immobile for a few seconds. The only offensive spell he got was Fireball, which was highly recommended on the forum as one of the few modifiable spells sold freely by NPCs. It was inferior to those learned from scrolls dropped by bosses. On the upside, it was available from level 1, had a short cooldown, and dealt decent damage to individual targets. Ross could now alternate between Fireball and Chaos Arrow, dealing magic damage to the enemy non-stop. He had to shell out a sum of 5,500 for everything, the lion's share of which went toward Fireball. But it was worth it. He wasn't bothered by having to level so many skills. Only a handful would be in constant usage, while the rest were complimentary. He would have looked like a right chump in the Fallen City had their party run into mobs with nasty debuffs. He didn't have Purify back then, after all. Besides, all his skills leveled much faster than in case of regular players, due to his heroic bonuses. He went to the bank next, renting a magically protected safe linked to the owner, and dumped a large part of his stuff in there. Ross jostled through the market crowd after the Mages Guild for a while, where several players training their pickpocket skill tried to steal from him. Hardly enthused by what he saw, he headed for the auction house, where he found out that bidding would only start 6 days later. He didn't want to waste all that time, so he rented a room at an inn and stayed there for 2 days, cutting gems, by the end of which he was finally rid of the remains of his ore. In between, while his mana was replenishing, he studied the game forum. On the third day, he went to the market again, having paid for a stall in the sector where equipment for low-level players was sold, and spent the whole day there, netting a mere 400 coins for his troubles. He certainly had no gift for commerce. His green friend Shoto would be handy here. He would likely unload all his stuff for 3 times the price in about an hour. In an ironic twist, though Ross had lots of expensive items, he was forced to sell ore and gems, since it was much easier and quicker. Safer, too. It was time to be considering finding a partner who could handle all these affairs. Shoto would be great, but Ross wouldn't approach him on pain of death now. Too many people must be aware of their dealings together, so the orc would be watched. Ross would much rather concentrate on obtaining stuff for sale instead of doing the actual selling, but he had to do everything himself, at least for the time being. It sure was hard to be on one's own these days. Ross had to wait for the auction sale to begin. The anonymity of the process appealed to Ross, as he wanted to avoid being seen with valuable stuff. In order to put a lot up for bidding, one had to rent a special crate, or a box if the items were small. Only Ross or the auctioneer NPC could open them. It sufficed for a player to put their hand to the crate to open it, and the NPC had a special key. Once the NPC took an item out, he would announce its properties, and the item's description would appear on one of the walls, like on a projection screen. The first day was reserved for announcing the lots, and the bidding itself would begin the next day. Most of the information on available lots would be published on the forum by the evening, so there was no point in staring at walls. You could just browse the forum, ponder whether or not you wanted a given lot, and then make your decision. The player paid for crates and boxes, receiving an auction participant's ring that was only valid for 3 days. Upon putting their wares in the rented crates or boxes, they left them at the auction warehouse, whereupon all those hundreds or even thousands of boxes were transported to the auction hall. The player would find the money or the wares in the very same boxes. The ring helped to identify your items by highlighting them for collection. The system made it rather difficult to identify the owner. Ross decided against selling the boots from the set, though he was tempted to. That would be too suspicious. The item must have been extremely rare if no one had ever sold anything like it before, so it probably made sense to hold on to it for now. Instead, he decided to sell about 10 enhanced items with reasonable stat bonuses, and a few good and excellent ones with average bonuses, intending to net at least 7,000 for everything. He also put up 2 lots of gems, a box with 50 cut amethysts of high quality, and another one with 20 citrines. The auction was a boring success. There was no undue excitement over any of Ross's lots, which suited him just fine. The last thing he needed was publicity. The gems came as some surprise, selling for more than twice the price he had gotten from the NPCs. Evidently, he had been foolish to take the easy route by unloading them to the NPCs. Only 3 of the items remained unsold, which was a good result. He ended up with more than expected, 100 short of 8,000. Ross came to the Mercenaries Guild a week later, having spent all his time primarily in Mages Guild libraries and traveling around the nearby towns. A burly warrior chuckled as he saw his character, then grinned, called Ross a cutie, and told him this was the lair of seasoned fighters, not pocket healers, so the young lady must be lost. Ross replied that he wasn't lost at all, having come here with the precise intention of hiring a detachment of fighters. Of course, if he was mistaken and there weren't any fighters on this property, he would apologize and leave. He was allowed to pass, though the guard grumbled something at his back. I need a squad of fighters for a day's work in the 120 to 150 level range. Tanks, healers, and DPS. 10 ought to do it. The dwarf he was talking to didn't look like a warrior, more like a typical pencil pusher. Scratching his ear with a feather, he said in an oily voice, "Look, miss, you are aware that recent events have resulted in a certain shortage of mercenary personnel at the guild." "You mean the mine war?" "Precisely." "Well, sure, but that was almost a month ago. There are few warriors, and of those nearly everyone is on the mend. The prices have grown considerably." "I'll pay." "Please tell me how you intend to use our warriors. I am most dreadfully sorry, but we are in no condition to risk them on missions likely to result in heavy losses." "No losses expected. I need to spend a day leveling at the Fiery Cleft, to the south of Dilia." The dwarf looked surprised. "Well, the monsters you find there are sure tough, but you will receive too little XP for killing them. Our warriors will get most of it. The level gap between you and them is just too big." "I'd like to try it anyway. There's no risk in it for you, right?" "None at all. And we all need to make a living." "We wouldn't be able to charge you much for just one day's worth of fighting, and it takes 2 days just to get there and 2 more to return. This isn't very convenient for us. Could we arrange something for at least a week?"
"How much do you charge for a day, and how much for a week?"
"Well, a party of 10 would be overkill for the cleft. 8 would be enough. 4 fighters, including 2 tanks, an archer, a water mage, a buffer, and a healer. A good party against creatures whose element is fire."
"I can heal too."
"You're weak.
But any kind of help comes in handy."
"No one is going to give you a discount for it. A day's work for a party like that will cost you exactly 4,000 silver pieces. A week will cost 25, so you save 3, which is substantial."
Ross had a little less than 10, so he shook his head.
"I won't be able to afford a week. But look, your warriors won't waste any time. It's a few hours' walk from Dilia to a nearby royal fort. That one's a major hub, and the army has a stationary teleport there. As far as I know, your guild has the right to use army teleports. So we could get there in a jiffy. 2 hours there, and 2 more back. We'd manage to do the whole thing within a single day, and there won't be any logistical issues."
"We can indeed use army teleports, but it's not free."
"How much would it cost to transport a party like that?"
"We'd need 2 transportations, which would cost around 2,500 silver pieces."
"Wow, they even charge you that much?"
"They do, and that's not all. We'd need to bribe them to let you come along."
"Bribe?"
"Sure. You aren't a guild member, and the permit doesn't cover civilians."
"How much would the bribe be?"
500 or 600, maybe even 700.
Wasn't that something? Corruption rife, even among the AI-controlled NPCs. I'll cover all of it. Can we set out the day after tomorrow?
We can, if we manage to arrange everything with the jarheads.
Chapter 41. The first sign they saw was that the forest became sparse, woodland eventually giving way to a plain with a few low hills and the odd crooked tree sticking out, most of them dry, or nearly dry. The grass wasn't particularly lush either. Ross had seen deserts covered with more vegetation. The fiery cleft lay between two ranges of hills, resembling a very narrow quarry with craggy walls about a mile deep. There was hot air coming from below, and you could see smoke plumes and flames coming from underneath the outcroppings of rock and the piles of slag. Ross didn't read much about the history of the place. It appeared that some ancient mages of great power made some kind of blunder during a massive ritual aimed at containing the element of fire, or, put simply, they tried to stop a volcano eruption. Stop it, they eventually did, leaving nothing of the volcano, as well as a couple of villages and a small town, which became replaced by a crater. The nearby fields and forests suffered too, and the locals had to relocate elsewhere. The reason the place appealed so much to Ross was that the cleft had a certain property that made creatures of the fiery persuasion feel very much at home here. There were multitudes of such mobs, and no matter how many of them you killed, new ones kept arriving from some dimension in the great beyond. When mob density became critical, they would raid the outlying area, which was why approaches to the cleft were a charred desert. Province authorities weren't very happy about it, so a network of forts was built around the anomaly, and the players were encouraged to kill the beasts and be rewarded with lots of related quests. There were other benefits for the players. The best sweepers of the cleft could earn achievements that gave substantial benefits to residents of the province. Such persistent and lucky players earned profitable quests from NPCs and various discounts. The locals were also less stringent about high karma, and the guards might even ignore the ones whose names were very slightly reddish. Yet, the cleft would have been very popular even without such bonuses. One didn't have to look for mobs here. All you needed to do was get as far down as it took to encounter mobs in your level range. It was very easy. The lower you went, the more powerful the creatures became. The bottom was a swarm with elite mobs, including a few bosses, and some of the latter were considered yummy enough to warrant regular raids by top clans. Players could level to 180 or a little higher here. Where would one begin? That depended on nothing but the players. A team of friends that worked well together could hunt quarry of levels much higher than their own. Weapons and equipment also played an important part. Money was another option. You could literally pay for a group of high-level players to let you hang around them. When grouped up, they would get most of the XP, but you wouldn't regret it either, if only by avoiding the grind and saving on low-level equipment and elixirs. There were few paths leading into the depths of the cleft, and they were particularly scarce near the fort. The leader of the group, a warrior orc by the name of Mathdun, told Ross they would go to a spot he was already familiar with, and that he would be completely in command. No idiotic orders from the client would be entertained. Ross didn't object to either condition. About a dozen players were sitting near the area where the path began, high-level ones as well as the instantly identifiable noobs. The arrival of an NPC party surprised them and instantly drew their interest. When they saw a flighting player in their midst, they started to bombard Ross with questions.
Are you doing a quest? I've never seen one that involves going below with NPCs. Help me level. Hey, you, short stuff, why are you following them?
I'm not following them, said Ross as he passed by. They are following me.
You? Whatever do you want with them?
They'll help me level.
You hired NPCs to power level you? That's ridiculous. We'd have helped you for a third of the price.
My dad hired them for me. He said NPCs are much better at power leveling.
You haven't seen what we can do. Go on, tear up the contract, and we'll take you all the way down at once. You can even peek at a boss.
I'll consider your proposition, said Ross, tactfully.
Help me level, please,
whined the antsy noob again, already behind him. Ross heard interesting snatches of conversation as his party walked on. They were discussing him. The common verdict was, a silly girl with a rich daddy who spends tons of real money on the game. He smiled. That was the very image he'd intended to create and maintain, as it would make it much easier for him to buy and sell expensive items and use expensive services. A noob girl traveling this way and that with the aid of expensive teleportation seemed rather suspicious, but a noob girl with a rich daddy could get away with all this stuff easily.
We'll leave the path now, and the terrain will be rougher, Mathden warned him, and then explained, we'll get there a lot faster this way. The path makes a large loop here, and there's no point in taking the long way around.
The mercenaries dispatched a group of mobs that attacked them after the first crag, and proceeded onward without delay. The second took much longer to get through. They got a little unlucky. A group of players who had been grinding here got wiped out completely, having drawn the attention of a large train of mobs right before their demise, so all the beasts rushed their new quarry. Things got tense for a while, but never reached a critical moment. They stopped at the third level. The mobs here had lots of HP, and some of them possessed a number of nasty skills. They also preferred to attack in groups of two or three, sometimes more, after sneaking up on the warriors from behind tall piles of enormous slag rocks. This was no longer a pleasure walk. Ross kept dispelling debuffs on one NPC after another, although they told him to cut it out, or at least be more discreet about it to avoid drawing the aggro. Ross kept on dispelling and healing, occasionally using Chaos Arrow to finish off half-dead mobs. Whenever they encountered a particularly powerful monster that took the entire party no less than a full minute to put down, he would cast Soul Trap. No, he didn't come here to power level, and the reason he spent so much money had nothing to do with the measly fraction of the XP he would get. What he needed was a pet that could compare to the elite Leprous, and preferably more than one.
An elite, level 170 at least, yelled the mage. He must have had stats permitting him to identify higher-level monsters, as the NPC himself was level 135. Stasis, cover the client, sleep the beast, shield wall, horseshoe formation, shields on tanks.
It resisted sleep, shouted the mage. The archer froze behind Ross, throwing wary glances in every direction. To mercenaries, the death of a client was the ultimate disgrace. Both tanks rushed the beast that looked like a 9-foot-tall, crimson praying mantis. Barely visible, glowing cocoons enveloped them as they ran, the buffer and the healer shielding them with spells that would absorb a certain amount of damage before they started losing HP. The mantis struck with both forelegs, covered in bony spikes. In the real world, the creature's sheer mass would sweep its opponents away, but game mechanics worked a bit differently, and the buffed-up fighters repelled the attack. The mob opened its snout, unleashing a fountain of sparks that tore through the shields at once.
The tank's HP bars began dwindling, and that was when the other two fighters, one double-wielding daggers and the other swords, struck from the flanks with skills that stunned the mob and saddled it with debuffs, lowering attack and defenses. As soon as the stun wore off, the mob was hit with another, this time courtesy of one of the tanks.
"I got aggro," Mathden yelled. "Everyone but the archer, pour it on."
The elite mob's HP bar was steadily decreasing. He had no other surprises in stock. Four fighters with stun skills were simply too much. The mob had high resistances, so the skill didn't land every time, but with four stunners, the party still retained near total control. The mantis tried to break out of its ring once, but the mage's sleep spell got it this time, while the warriors regrouped and kept hammering away at their target. Ross just stood there, protected by the archer and occasionally healing the tanks, redundant though it may have been. Even the healers would at times break rotation to join the mage in pelting the monster with some offensive spell. Mathden stepped away from the smoking corpse of the mantis and wiped the sweat off his brow. "It's time for us to leave this furnace. It's getting late, and anything can happen in the cleft after dark. The path can be walked in both directions after all, and the kind of critters that crawl out from the very bottom will be beyond our capabilities." Ross nodded. "Sure, you can go. You have fulfilled all your contractual obligations." "We have to get you to the city." "Thanks, but I'll make my own way. It's very dangerous to wander here on your own. You won't make it through the upper ledges if you cannot hide in the shadows, and you do not possess that skill." "I'll use a teleportation scroll." "As you wish. Are you quite satisfied with our performance?" Ross nodded energetically. "You've been great. If I ever need to hire warriors in your city, I'll know who to look for." The orc gave a perfunctory bow, turned around, and started toward the exit, followed closely by the others. Ross stayed on the ledge alone. He looked down at the little lights scattered across the bottom of the abyss and sighed. There must be powerful bosses wandering around down there, which likely dropped expensive trophies. But even 10 such mercenary parties may not be enough to get to them. Such raids were long and arduous, and you had to be no less than level 180 to take part in one. There was no denying or escaping this fact. With trusty friends at one side, one's opportunities in this world grew exponentially. Ross had originally planned to change his appearance, but now decided against it. The skill took a week to reset, and there seemed to be a possibility to use it on someone else. A person in a similar situation, or maybe even worse. Someone who lived in a cage and could only dream of something better. Someone who would surely appreciate a present like that. Ross considered that he might be doing an unbelievably stupid thing, and that he might be instantly ratted out. But what did he have to lose? He could always teleport away, hole up in the woods for a week, and change into someone completely unrecognizable. There were other options as well. He could skip the woods altogether and spend his time doing something useful. He shouldn't be too concerned about his current incarnation being made, so what if he'd spent a week all across the sector using city teleports and trying to get noticed by as many people as possible? In particular, this concerned the spies that were almost always present. They may be on the lookout for somebody else, but he doubted that the strange noob would be forgotten that easily. He had also talked up his rich daddy for making it possible for him to see the entire game world. The only drawback was that people would learn that sex was no longer a constant in Second World. But that was something Ross could live with. It would only take a week to change his appearance. Recreating it, though, and making it as inconspicuous as possible anywhere he might turn up would be a much lengthier process. But was he really so concerned about compromising this identity? Not at all. He was already starting to detest the endless private chat windows with salivating, horny degenerates believing they were talking to a young, teenage girl. If the person he planned on revealing his identity to ended up betraying his confidence, he might even thank him. He decided he'd had enough. Ross approached the praying mantis and searched the carcass. He smiled. Another crystal with a high-level pet, apart from the loot. He took out a teleport scroll, broke the seal, and bent it in two. The cleft was a world dominated by every shade of red, but here was a flash of blazing white, with the bright arch of a portal appearing above the ground. Ross visualized his destination in as much detail as he could, and stepped through the portal window. Chapter 42. Ross was walking down the street of his hometown. Not his real-world hometown, obviously, but Arben, where just 2 months ago he'd plopped onto its cobblestones as an exceptionally dazed and confused noob. He had a somewhat different appearance back then, to put it mildly, but that did not matter to Ross now. He never did grow accustomed to his character's looks due to the repeated radical transformations he'd undergone. Other changes to his character were far more important and consequential, and the very things he was now so desperate to hide. But could it be said he was a noob no longer? Not likely. His level was 34, nowhere near enough to be taken seriously. He had lots of stat points, earned in a variety of ways, including rare stats and skills that were notoriously hard and expensive to raise. But where did it leave him? A top player would still take him out with a few hits of some souped-up skill, perhaps only one in some cases. Was he rich? Nowhere near that. He was still a long way from becoming a millionaire, thus far spending most of his earnings on himself. Heroic achievements? Sure, there were plenty of those, but so far they seemed to cause him more grief than anything. This wasn't gaming, but rather frenzied attempts of surviving, grasping at one thing after another, and wasting hours contemplating things he'd never even get a chance to try. There was never enough strength, time, or abilities. Or hands. Second World was a team game, but Ross was still on his own. Ross found Digits right where he thought he'd be, on the narrow strip of land between the moat and the city wall, hunting as it was eventide. His acquaintance was squatting, holding a smooth pebble in his hand and peering at the water's surface, where plump frogs lounged on lily pads. He chose his target and prepared for a throw. That was when Ross, having approached the Super Zero unnoticed, greeted him politely. "Good evening." The pebble still in his hand, Digits turned around and gave Ross a puzzled look. Ross didn't wait for him to blurt out whatever he deemed appropriate in a conversation with a total stranger, a flighting and a teenage girl at that, and immediately added, "I want to tell you that I haven't cursed you once, so you shouldn't worry on that account." Digits, who was about to open his mouth for a suitably playful response, froze right where he stood. His jaw swung sideways in a comical way, and the expression in his eyes became impossible. Too many emotions were reflected at once, stumbling one another every fraction of a second. He made a visible attempt to collect himself, failing miserably. Then he asked, in a barely audible voice that sounded near unrecognizable, "That's quite a disguise you've got there. I've never seen anyone look so much like a female character. Do you seriously think I'm in drag? I thought you knew me better, old friend." "Then how? No disguise. And the appearance is certified to represent an actual person, as you can see by the symbol next to my name. Or did you miss it?" Digits shook his head. Calling you the Emperor of Noobs was the understatement of the century, and calling you a noob now would be rather awkward." "Don't feel awkward," Ross interrupted. "I was a noob then, and a noob I remain, and I'm not ashamed in any way. You make do with what you've got, after all." Digits rose and looked at him attentively, looking very focused. "You do realize that if I take a short walk to the teleport and tell a few guys about you, I'm likely to get paid well in exchange. No kidding. Might be enough for months on a full account, perhaps even a year. Go on, hurry up before someone beats you to it." "Right you are. I'd hate to miss my chance. Thanks for reminding me. So, shall I run along now?" "Absolutely. Get to it." "Can I just ask you a little question?"
"Well, as long as it's a little one."
"Why?"
"Why what?"
"You know what I'm talking about." Digits raised his voice a little. "Cut the banter already. It's ridiculous. Why are you here? To mock me or get back at me somehow for what happened then?"
"I bear absolutely no grudges for what happened then. On the contrary, you are the reason why I have so many opportunities now. If I didn't wind up at that mine, I'd be doomed to endless drudgery as a gardener or a window cleaner in one of the cities. You really did me a good turn, Digits. Helped me out. Some other person might have borne a grudge, but not me. And you did warn me the job wouldn't be too cushy, so faulting you wouldn't be fair. I didn't come here to mock you, either. I came to thank you, and to give you a little something as thanks for your help 2 months ago. Here goes." Ross raised his hand and activated the clean slate skill icon. Digits felt his legs wobble and sat down on the ground, blinking in confusion.
"What? What was that? What have you done to me?"
"That was my thanks," said Ross. Then he added, as he turned to leave, "And now, you can run to the teleport all you want."
Ross was already crossing the bridge when a breathless voice behind him whispered, "Stop, will you? Why don't you mind your private message window? My vigor is all down to zero. I can't keep up with you."
"Someone once told me that was a good thing. When vigor bottoms out, the stat levels faster.
Wait, wasn't that you who said it?"
"I sure did, gods help me. Now will you stop galloping around like a horse already?"
"The acrobatics skill levels faster when you leap and hop. I know how to level acrobatics, and you're doing it like a noob."
Ross slowed down a bit.
"So how do you level it?"
"Screw acrobatics. Just tell me what that was."
"Nothing much. Just my way of saying thanks."
"Uh-huh. Well, I've had people thank me many times, but so far I haven't had stat progress locks removed once. Am I going insane, or are you not telling me everything?"
"My thanks weren't of the ordinary variety. For some reason, I instantly suspected as much. So what was that?"
"The teleport is in the other direction."
"Oh, is it? As if I'm really going to run over there for my 30 silver pieces. Don't even think you can shake me off without an answer. Well?"
"Well, it's this skill I have, you see, a pretty rare one. If I use it on someone in a private place without any onlookers, a player becomes just as overexcited as you.
Let me guess, the skill was received by a certain noob along with a bunch of rather extraordinary achievements?"
"That sure is fine guesswork."
"Okay, let me vouchsafe another guess. I don't think my personal qualities were quite enough for you to return to a place where everyone's looking for you just to express your gratitude. And I'd like to add something else. No matter your answer, I won't run to the teleport. 30 silver won't solve my problems, but you, or tagging along with you, just might.
Useful information about me is worth 10 to 20,000 in gold. Check out the forum. It will be more in dollars, since the exchange rate keeps growing."
"I need a lot more than that."
"Me too."
"So?"
"You may have been foolish enough not to have managed to earn enough for a proper account in over a year, but you still know a lot more about the game than I do. A friend like that, might come in handy. Well, I have enough for a worker's account, but I need one that I could level up to 10 for my modest plans to come to fruition. Even a month would suffice. That's just my way of telling you I'm not a complete idiot. Bear in mind that stats like mine won't get me so much as a position of a shoeshine boy at the local waste management plant, so earning money like everybody else is not exactly an option.
Right. So just low-key hustles, such as delivering noobs to noob mines and so on.
That, too. So, is there anything else but my mental capacity that interests you?
You were one of the beta testers. I read about it. They locked your stats and levels completely, but they left the skills intact.
Yeah, removing them would be a pain, but you can't use them properly when your stats are locked, so they're completely useless.
Your skills were often unbalanced, giving you advantage over other players, right?
That too. Even if our skills are still left in the game, they're the kind you can only get in a scroll drop from a very high-level boss.
So, what have you got?
My race was originally designed as a race of pure debuffers. The best thing I have is called Total Destruction, a unique racial skill in which the target receives 20% extra damage from all attacks for 8 seconds.
Doesn't sound like much.
You don't get it. The skill is scalable. As it grows, so does the extra damage percentage and effect duration, and other effects will develop too. It ignores all resistances. Its effect is only cut in two for every 100 levels of difference between you and the target, so a level 110 mob will only receive 10% extra damage, and it won't work at all on a level 200. But that's at the lowest tier. It would only get better as I level and raise the skill. It is also difficult to dispel. Buffers will have a hard time removing it.
You're right. That's a damn good ability.
So, what's the plan?
It's my third month here, and I am beginning to realize something. It's much harder to play on your own than in a team.
It took you this long to realize as much? What were you thinking earlier? I have to take back what I said about you possibly not being a noob anymore, and you still haven't given me your main reason.
What makes you think there is one?
My knowledge of human nature. If there's no such reason, I've misjudged you completely.
What were you back in the real world, Digits?
That's considered a tactless question in the game world.
Sorry.
Well, you must have realized I didn't work for a cartel, or do illicit seasonal gigs across the border, although I have been up north. Before the injury, that is. Mexico is full of contradiction, and you can find anything there, and all sorts. You can think of me as a professor, if you absolutely have to. Will you tell me your reason now?
This whole thing struck me as an injustice.
Both these worlds are full of injustice. What exactly bothers you so?
You said you were a cripple in both worlds.
I just felt that was wrong. So you decided to fix the injustice. How generous of you.
Well, combined with what I could get from you in return, my generosity goes hand in hand with enlightened self-interest.
They wrote on the forum that you're Russian. Is that true?
I'm afraid so.
That explains a lot. You people always were of the troublemaking variety.
Look, I'll be gone very shortly. I intend to make some money. As I have already told you, I need a lot of it, and that's pretty much all I want from this game. I'm giving you a choice. Come along or stay behind. And I won't even hold a grudge if you report to the spies at the teleport everything you've just learned from me.
Sure. Spilling the beans to them sounds tempting, but my life experience tells me that I stand to gain much more with you than with them, and greed is my main vice, so I think I'll tag along.
You may not like hanging around me. I have a tendency of attracting problems. Expect things to get pretty hairy.
I've made up my mind, so why don't you just tell me our next destination?
We'll go and clear a chaos dungeon.
Just the two of us? Did you expect anyone else to join?
Not exactly, but don't you reckon there may be too few of us for something like that?
Last time around, I went on my own, and I managed it all the same. Party invite coming your way.
Got it. What?
Mother of God! How is this even possible? A few modest bonuses from my achievements.
You call these modest?
You get 17 points to all the primary stats and 4 to secondary, so long as you're in the same party as me. You will also be getting 40% more experience and a few minor bonuses besides.